Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
This is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show.
Broadcasting live from Sydney, Australia on the BBS Radio Network.
Yeehaw! Today we have a very special guest, Christine Carlson, who is co-author of the best-selling Don't Sweat the Small Stuff with her late husband, Dr. Richard Carlson.
And Christine's a dear friend of mine who I met in Costa Rica not too long ago on an adventure series project we were doing, a film, and we had some really great conversations, and I'm so glad to have you on our show, Christine. Thank you so much for being on Universal Soul Love Radio with us today.
Thanks, David, and it's so nice to hear your voice, Lana. I love your accent so much. You should probably say that about mine. How are you both doing?
We're doing well, except, you know, we're trying not to sweat the small stuff, which immediately does come up every day. And I think the title of your book is wonderful because that's one of the problems with everyday life, how not to sweat the small stuff, because it appears to be large when you get upset with small things. In the big picture, it's not that important, though.
No, it really isn't. I mean, just this morning I had to drop my stepdaughter off at school and I had to go grocery shopping, get the laundry, and then I came back and we found pieces of our technical equipment missing, which was caused a bit of a technical crisis for me at the last minute. So now we're sort of a little bit handicapped in how we do the show, but the show must go on.
And, that's right.
But that is the small stuff. I mean, this is the everyday.
That's life with children, especially teenage children. Well, I've got one that's about to turn 13, another one who's 17, and I am sweating the small stuff. So, Christine, tell me, how do I not sweat the small stuff, please?
Well, you know, Lana, that's a great question. I think it's a lifetime practice not sweating the small stuff, and that's why there's nine books in the series. There's lots of small stuff people sweat in all different facets of life. So, you know, whether it's with your family, with your kids, in your love relationship, I mean, it really, I think the first step for anybody is to keep their life in perspective by maybe defining what's small ahead of time. And the books are filled with strategy, really just like strategy for keeping life in perspective. That's really what it's all about, that if you can become more responsive to life and less reactive in the moment, and that just means being able to take a pause and be mindful and present, then you'll find that you react less and you have some pretty nice, calm, gentle, and more wise responses to life. And that's kind of in a nutshell what Don't Sweat the Small Stuff is all about, being mindful.
I love that, Christine, being mindful. And something you said to be responsive rather than reactive. Can you tell us and our listeners what the difference is between those two ways of behaving?
Sure. I mean, reaction, you can liken it to like a knee-jerk reaction. When something triggers you and, you know, somebody says something that annoys you, for example, you would just react to that statement without thinking or without taking a pause. Being responsive would be that you'd still be possibly annoyed by something somebody said to you, but rather than react in that knee-jerk quick way, you would take a deep breath and you'd pause and reflect, and you'd be aware of your triggers more, in the sense of, wow, I feel triggered right now, but I'm going to actually breathe for a few breaths and then I'm going to see how I feel in my body in a moment. And then that's how you become more gentle and mindful. And a lot of times just simply tuning in and tuning into your breath and before you, you know, react, that's just a habit like everything else that happens in life. It's all that we're just living a series of habits every single day from the time we wake up to the time we go to sleep at night.
That's really interesting. And I noticed, Christine, that while we were fiddling around with equipment, trying to get the equipment to work, you said that you'd just go and meditate for 5 minutes and then we'd call you back. And it sounds like you make use, very practical use of any available time to practice meditation and mindfulness. Is that right?
I do. I mean, I figure, you know, I'm not being very helpful, probably being on the line while you're, you know, wrestling around with your equipment. And it's always nice if I have a couple extra minutes before I speak or to do anything, is just to sit and breathe. And so I thought, oh, this is a great opportunity.
I
didn't really have time to, you know, I just kind of ran in, got online. And so I thought, oh, well, they're not ready. I could use this extra time just to quiet down and get centered. And yeah, for sure. And I've just, you know, over the years, that's just something that as I was raising my kids and, you know, I really always put that to practice. They'd come in and there'd be some drama going on and I'd be like, I just start to breathe, you know, just really begin to breathe and just kind of keep my bearings. And when you can keep your own bearings through drama of somebody else's, it's actually elevates them and helps them to calm down. Whereas if you get all wrapped up in it, you know, like all taken in, it just fans the flame and the flame gets to be a big fire, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Christine. I've learned that recently that, you know, if you have fear or you notice someone else has fear, it does absolutely no good to sort of validate the fear or even to sort of just say the fear doesn't exist either or invalidate it, because it's just simple enough to say, yes, I can see that you're in fear or you're anxious or you're nervous, and try to be compassionate and understanding in that, because by denying the person their feelings of fear or anxiety, it's not helpful. And it's also not helpful to feed into it either, because it actually expands in a fear beyond what it might actually be in reality. So, you know, Lana and I have been playing with these concepts quite a bit lately.
I think reality is a really key word, you know, that you said, and that, you know, I've had this conversation many times over the years with people and even my own kids and friends, is that, you know, if we keep in mind the one concept that we live our world in our minds and in our thinking, and that our thoughts are not necessarily real. They're real to us because that's our form of reality, but our thoughts are really made up by our own thinking, and so are our fears, you know, and so, but the beauty of understanding that and knowing that is that you can begin to become curious about your fears and question the validity of your fears. And I'm not talking about if you actually have a fire or you have something that is truly like somebody's holding a knife at your throat, or, you know, I'm not talking about those kinds of fears. I'm talking about those emotional fears that become just as real as having a fire or having somebody's knife. Mm-hmm. That we can build up in our own minds to be such blocks, such emotional blocks, to actually, you know, keep us from, you know, achieving what we want to do, doing the things we want to do. And, you know, that's a principle that's woven throughout the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff book series, is really understanding your own reality and the lens from which you view the world, and that it's made up by you.
Yeah, I agree with you. Everything that we experience is experienced in the mind and interpreted by the mind. And there are such things as immediate threats where there's clear and convincing evidence of danger. And then there's perceived threats that may not actually be an immediate threat to our existence, or, you know, so it's very, our minds are very complex, and our emotions and our thoughts are very complicated. And you do have to question your own thoughts and feelings and really sort of have that reality-based thinking about what's actually happening outside of you and also what's happening inside of you.
Christine, tell us, it's what I guess we're particularly impressed with is what your book is about, because most people, the right sort of motivational bestsellers, focus on big things like joy and motivation and finding your passion. What you've done is you've focused on how to get rid of the little negative things, which is kind of almost magical, because certainly in Buddhist philosophy, when you get rid of the negative, it's when you get rid of the negative dukkha, so to speak, that the negative things, that you realize you have got happiness. You remove the negative and your natural state is a state of bliss. How did you and your husband or ex-husband, your late husband, come to focus on such an important and yet not well, I guess, recognized principle of life?
Well, I think given the fact that, you know, stress is such a key part of adult life, and even now with, you know, kids in high school and even in junior high, I mean, kids experience a tremendous amount of stress, as you know, throughout their education as well. So given the fact that stress is something that we all need to learn how to, I don't like the word manage because I really don't personally like to manage my stress, but I don't like my stress to become too overbearing, you know, but I feel like, so stress is, there's a certain amount of stress that's actually healthy. It actually propels us forward in life. But when stress becomes an inhibitor or a block to achieving what we want to do in our lives, or to a block to our joy, for example, that's when we want to like learn some tools, some emotional tools, and how to keep life in perspective. So the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff books is really about five principles of happiness that my husband wrote about in his earlier work, You Can Be Happy No Matter What. And those principles are understanding your thoughts, understanding how your moods and feelings play a role in your life, understanding separate realities and present moment living. So These are the principles that are woven throughout the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff book series. The reason why Don't Sweat the Small Stuff is about, the title is because that is the overall arching theme of what becomes really important in our lives that isn't important, you know, and the small stuff isn't important, but we lose our perspective. And when we've lost our perspective, that means that life is happening, like let's say the small stuff is a little black dot on a very large white page. Well, life is what's happening in the white space, but you're really focused on that one black dot. So what's happening is you're missing the present moment. You're missing the joy. You're missing, you know, you're putting wasted energy on that one small black dot when you could have a whole world of possibility. And that's really, in a kind of a nutshell, that's a lot what people will gain out of the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff books, all nine of them.
That's so true. You've said some amazing things right there. So we met in Costa Rica, like I said, and we had some great conversations. And you were actually recently in Mount Shasta too while we were there on our spiritual retreat with David Quigley at the Alchemy Institute. Okay.
I'm so sorry I missed you guys.
But that was very what a thing though. Jeez.
I know.
Mount Shasta was beautiful, by the way. I just want to.
Oh yeah, it's a special place.
Very spiritual, very very different, almost dimensional to the rest of the world.
I was just trying to think back for a minute during our trip in Costa Rica, and I was thinking when we were on the bus, we were having a lot of fun, and I remember I was speaking to you you were really getting into, I noticed almost that I often talk on the show about my connection to the divine feminine essence that I believe I have. And I remember Jen Rohde, who was on our show. I saw this goddess energy coming right through you and speaking through you. And it was so amazing because I recognize it so well for me, for my own, you know, my own personal reality. Everybody knows this is sort of my thing. But Jen actually from the back of the bus said she noticed the energy coming into your crown chakra too. Oh. And it was just so amazing, the things you were saying. And I remember I wrote a quote down that you had mentioned. I'm trying to find it actually.
Oh, I remember that. Oh, I know. You were talking about, you were saying how sometimes it was daunting, the task of like really trying to make a large impact, I think, in life. And I said, well, what if you let go of the idea that you have to make a large impact in life, but you just did, you know, small, like great things every single day, like that you just made every moment of every day great or something, like it was something like that.
Yeah. You were saying you don't actually have to do great works in life. You only have to be great at what you do every day. And I just thought that was so profound. And, Yep, actually, that's exactly what you wrote. I put that on post. One does not have to create great works in the world. We only have to be great at what we do every day. And I heard you saying that during our conversations, and I saw that higher energy going right through you. And Jen saw that as well, because she's a great channeler and a great woman that I admire a lot. And that was just such a great experience for me. It was one of those, a moment I won't forget.
Oh, that's great. No, I always think we're just all the vehicle, you know, like if we open ourselves up to, you know, being that vehicle that, you know, that of that divine feminine or divine love, I like to call it divine love, you know, and in the right moment, in the right time, then it comes through.
Yeah, I remember Lana saying the other night, you were saying that when you open your heart chakra, the universe opens its heart chakra as well.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's very beautiful.
Something we talk about a lot is sort of doing a dance with the universe, because we're all interconnected. And another concept that I've recently been focusing on more with my patients is the concept of transformation, alchemy, and how we can transform energy into the ton of energy that we want it to be. And perspective is also an important concept. And I guess in your books, you focus on the fact that the small stuff is small. We need to keep a perspective of that. On the other hand, though, the so-called small but beautiful, wonderful, kind things we do every day, I believe, can be connected to the rest of the universe and can flow out to the rest of the universe. So if you like, I think we have a big role in transforming what happens in our lives. The small stuff that is negative can be blocked and remain small. We can become larger. But the other things which possibly can be seen as small, like a kind act, a smile, a hug, I do believe that that can be directed to the universe, so that those so-called small things can become great. And that for me is the concept of transformation and alchemy.
Beautiful.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I know, Christine, that you've written some other books. You say that there's a whole series of Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and I believe that you've written a great-sounding book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Mums.
And for women, and
Yeah, there's at work, there's for mums, there's for women, there's for love. There's a whole series. There's for teens.
So can you tell us a little bit about how not to sweat the small stuff with teens? I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who might be grateful for a few tips.
I certainly would be. We've had our share of drama here.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I parenting is probably the number one thing that we all sweat. I mean, it's the hardest job that there is. And, you know, I think that our kids, you know, we worry about them, you know, we're stressed about how they're stressed. We worry about their health. We worry about everything about them. So of course, you know, most of the strategies in Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Moms are really geared toward calming mom down, helping her feel like she's got a friend in the process of parenting, really developing like a very strong rapport with your kids. I mean, it's all kind of the same stuff that all, you know, parenting books have, you know, being very consistent in your approach with your kids, being a world-class listener, listening from your heart, you know, just really, you know, kind of like a lot of common sense principles that are throughout the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series, but they're all doable, workable ideas, ways of practicing life. You know, practicing communication so that it's coming out the way you really want it. And if we look at life as overall a happiness practice, I mean, we practice our lives based on our habits and what we practice every single day. And, you know, and I always like with moms, I say the number one thing is really how you start your day is how you live your day. So when you wake up in the morning, if you wake up like you're turning off a fire alarm, and you're running out of bed and you're frazzled right when you wake up, well, chances are you're going to have that kind of day. And whether you're a parent or not, the same is true. If you wake up very peacefully and you have some sort of, you know, spiritual, inspirational, peaceful ritual that you practice every morning, it's just a way of you starting your day off like in a very inspirational, peaceful place. It's much easier to access peace amidst chaos if you've practiced going to peace inside, you know, when you're not in chaos. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It makes sense to all of us. I understand when you were talking about mindfulness and finding your center, your zero point, because I took mindfulness at the John Cabot Zen Center at the University of Massachusetts. And I think it was one of the most useful classes I've ever taken.
Yeah, he's a master at mindfulness.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I've used it in my career. I mean, Lana and I are both problem solvers. Our career, our profession is all about problem solving, Lana being a psychiatrist, me being a private investigator. And I heard you mention strategies, and that's certainly something that I spend a lot of time exploring and working, helping people develop life strategies. I often used to say life coping strategies or life management strategies, but I think life strategies is simply a good way of describing it, or a winning strategy, anything that helps you become more effective in life and sort of weave around all of these issues that come up, all of these tests and challenges of life, which inevitably come up every day, some small, some big, but anyhow, they're just things that we need to face and overcome or work with or whatever.
And paradoxically, mindfulness is one of the greatest problem solvers, because when you sit back and you're mindful, you realize you actually don't have a problem.
That's very true. And also, problems don't seem like problems when you're in a high mood versus a low mood either. You know, like if you ask somebody what their life is like when they're in a low mood, they've got all sorts of problems. But if you, the same life, you know, you ask that person what's your life like now, and their mood is elevated, they don't have any problems at all. But it's really the same life going on, isn't it?
It is amazing. It's really a matter of perspective and being in a different state. And you know, Christine, one of the things that I am very passionate about is somehow influencing the education system so that the practice of mindfulness is actually widespread throughout all high schools and primary schools. I mean, this is actually much more important than learning maths or grammar or biology or science, the skill of how to live in your head.
That's wonderful. I share the same passion, and I think so do many. You know, it's wonderful that we live in a day and age where that's becoming a possibility, you know, that there's so many people that are really seeing that. You know, I know, like, for example, they've taken the TM practice into inner city schools, the Transcendental Meditation practice, and it's transformed, you know, inner city schools in California and all over the United States, that are schools where there's a lot of violence, a lot of truancy, a lot of problems. And because of the practice of TM, the kids are calm and they're present and they're in touch with their bodies. They're in touch with each other. They're connected and they're doing much better. There's huge, huge improvements going on. I love that this is the topic, because this means that we're really going to elevate our consciousness, you know, as a whole collective. If we can impact our children at a young age, imagine what the world will be like as they grow into productive adults that are mindfully practicing kindness and intention and a more compassionate way of life.
Absolutely. That's what Universal Soul Love was established for. That's our primary mission statement, is to help try to raise the conscious vibration of the collective consciousness of, you know, humanity and the planet. And that just starts within each one of us. I mean, I think most of the people listening and in our radio show know that. But we have to practice it. It's one thing to know it, and it's another thing to put it into action.
That's right. And taking, you know, as you did, taking the opportunity to meditate, if there's a, you know, 1 or 2 minutes spare, is something we can all do, but we can forget to do it. And that's why I just so So inspired by you taking that little break to do meditation. I mean, we could do that while we wait for an Uber or we can actually take, I remember years ago, I listened to this Buddhist master tell us about a practice of what he called integration, integrating. And he was a very practical man. And he was saying, yes, in our modern life, it can be very difficult to take 20 minutes or 30 minutes out of the day to meditate, but we can look for possible breaks and we can do a mini meditation. Mm. And from the point of view of a hologram, you know how a little bit can be a whole part of the whole. If you are a practicer if you do practice mindfulness and meditation, then I do believe you can get into that space of meditation just doing a half a minute of meditation. Mm-hmm. You sort of find your way into that space. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
I agree. Yeah. When I learned to meditate when I was in my 20s, it took me a while. You know, I remember my mind was so busy and it was frustrating and, you know, I was not accustomed to it. And then as I practiced, you know, for years, I noticed that it was much easier to drop in, that I could drop in merely 10 breaths and I would reach the same sort of, you know, same sort of more unbounded feeling of, you know, being completely present as opposed to how it would have taken me 15 or 20 minutes when I was younger, you know. So I completely agree with that. I think that there is a lot of value in just taking meditation pauses at work or any place, you know, because it just gives your mind that little break. And also just from a neurological standpoint, it's, as you probably know more than anyone, Lana, it's so good for your neuroplasticity and everything to just shut off those wires and let them, you know, let them fire in new ways than just staying, you know, constantly active. I just think it's really a wonderful tool for people. And again, it goes back to becoming a lot more responsive to life and a lot less reactive.
Absolutely. Happiness and love is actually very, very good for your health.
And in saying all of that, we're going to go to break, but I just want to mention one thing, Christine. When I first met you, I'm just amazed that being in your presence and in your space, I could not be stressed. I mean, you're like a nullifying force field.
Wow.
It's amazing.
I've been told I have a lot of peaceful energy, that's for sure.
You do. You neutralize stress. I mean, when somebody's in your space, they can't be stressed. It's just an amazing thing about you.
That is amazing. And we're going to have another friend of ours come on after the show, and she's Susan Glynn. She is an energy healer and a motivational speaker and personal life coach. And I'd like to focus a bit more on energy and as well grief, which I think is another topic of one of your books. So look, we'll just have a break now and come back later.
We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
This is Dr. Lana Love.
Welcome back to our show. Today we're very honored to have our very special guest, Christine Carlson, author of the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series, which has sold 30 million books worldwide, international bestseller, and we're very grateful and we're just so glad to have you on our show today, Christine. Thank you for being on Universal Soul Love with us.
Oh, thanks, David. Thanks, Lana. It's wonderful to be here.
So we were talking about energy and energy fields, and we were very keen to talk about that a little bit more. As well, we want to talk about perhaps your memoir, and I understand that your soulmate, your husband, did die a few years ago, and so sorry to hear that. I would love to hear more about how, and I think other listeners who, I mean, we all lose people, how to cope with things like that.
I mean, I actually came to Australia. I decided to come to Australia and meet Lana the day my father died, and I made drastic changes in my life. Actually, the day I picked up his ashes at the funeral and made a drastic decision. It was a good decision for me. But death certainly has been my greatest teacher, and it's actually been an ally for me in many ways, because it's helped me to live my life. So we do talk about that. We talk about life after life on the show quite a bit. In fact, we have a speaker from the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Institute coming on next week to talk about, and I've also worked in hospice, so we certainly, this is a very difficult issue, and we also have Susan Glenn, our dear friend, coming on to help us with this as well, with her experience, so.
Hello, Susan.
Hello, dear. It's great to be on the show, and it's a delight to meet you, Christine. What you've been saying has been fascinating to me. Yes, it's been fascinating to me, and you're speaking my language in so many ways, with the responsiveness rather than reactivity, because responsiveness always seems to me to be a step forward into the positive. Reactivity is a step back energetically into the negative, and that's in our whole energy field. So that made sense to me. And you mentioned stress and reality. Well, the thoughts that make the supposed reality, we can tweak those energetically, changing the very basic wave pattern that is the thought itself, and that then reduces or eats stress, eats it up, dissolves it. And that is actually the place where I come in, because that's the kind of work I do. It's a little bit like being a crazy mad magician, I suppose.
Well, you could be, I could be considered the kindergarten teacher, and you would be considered the graduate teacher.
Oh, well, thank you for that. I hadn't thought of it from that point of view, but it definitely is about playing with magic. And I struggled for years with meditation, and began to realize that my mind was just not wanting to play the game. And that's, I suppose, when I I'd begun already to do various different energy trainings, and I began to realize that I actually could, using various little mechanisms that were instant, change my entire energy state. I mean, if we have beautiful, pure essential oils, and I mean really pure ones, just sniffing through those can change our internal chemistry, and perhaps save us from having to take medications to suppress our negative emotions. Well, we can actually alter our energy field by using our hands, and those little processes or mechanisms can tweak the way in which our vibrations are behaving. And we can be a different wave pattern within moments. And that relieves us from being stuck in or putting up with a lot of things, including illnesses. It actually affects everything that we find difficult in life. Absolutely everything. It can be changed back to, from a non-love vibration, if you will, to a love vibration. And that's
yes, really it's, there's that. So many wonderful transformational techniques that we can use. I do believe that we are powerful beings who can use a variety of techniques to change the quality of our life. I think that's so important. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Of course, Susan does the healing codes, a wonderful technique. Grief. Can we talk about that for a little while? And look, Susan, I know that you also, your husband died as well. And I mean, to me, it must be one of the most heartbreaking things to actually lose your soulmate,
yeah.
Both Christine and Susan. It's losing your parents in some ways is easier because they're older. Losing a child, I don't know how you would ever cope with that. But I guess it's something we all have to deal with. I don't know how to do it. In Buddhism, we talk about non-attachment, the idea of realizing once again with mindfulness that
life is impermanent.
Life is impermanent. Mm. This is the nature of the world. But how do you accept it? And Christine, do you have any thoughts, any advice?
Or can you tell us your story? I think we only have about 10 minutes, but...
Yeah, so, well, my story is that in midlife, you know, we weren't at all prepared for Richard's sudden death. I mean, I call it his sudden departure, his sudden transition. You know, he was 45, I was 43, and he was flying to New York, and he had a pulmonary embolism on that flight. And so it was very, you know, super sudden, super shocking. And so it's a little bit like having the rug pulled out from under your feet and then not finding the floor for a really long time. And for me, I mean, I had never, I'd never lost anybody truly significant to me, because we have a lot of longevity in our family. And so I'd lost grandparents and, you know, people like that, but not somebody as close to me as my beloved. And so what I found really interesting, though, was I was really aware of that I was going through a process, and I didn't know anything about grief, and I didn't want to read a lot of books about it. I really wanted to be in it and experience whatever was intuitively there for me to experience. I sort of felt that I knew that the process was going to be really fertile ground for growth. And I knew that at some level it felt very much like I was birthing a new life. And perhaps if you speak of energy, that's definitely what I felt. A tremendous opening to the divine. I really, really for the first couple of years really could access Richard really easily. And I had this tremendous sense that death wasn't really real, that, you know, that he was all around me and that his energy and frequency was quite alive and quite well. Probably that was one of the greatest insights and one of the greatest beautiful things that I learned about death. Now, that didn't change the fact that my bed was empty at night and I had two teenage girls and I missed loving him in form, and that I went through a tremendous physical separation that had nothing to do. I could feel physically the pain of losing him, almost as if he was being ripped from me physically. And that took some time, you know, that took some time to work through that. And I was attached. You know, you can talk about not being attached, but as human beings, we do get attached. And that is part of what it means to be a human being, is that we do love and attach to people that we love. And yes, you do learn that it is temporary and it is impermanent, as are all things. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the most beautiful things that comes from loss, is that when you're going through loss, you really don't sweat the small stuff, that you have a true life perspective. And one of the great gifts that the people that die young or die at any time give us is they give us the gift of our life to really recognize that it's not just lip service to say that this life is short. It is short.
Yes.
And we have to recognize that every day.
That was the greatest and the first spiritual insight I ever had. The most important was that the loss of the mortal body and the truth of the eternal soul. And I spent a lot of time in studying mediumship at the Spiritualist Church, so I know exactly what you mean. And I know Susan Glynn does as well, and I appreciate what you just had to say. Maybe Susan can tell her story.
Very briefly, yes, because I realize I've got time constraints. But my late husband was diagnosed with melanoma cancer way too young as well. He passed eventually at 57, but we had about 8 years where he was diligently planning to create health. And I probably was well and truly into my energy processes by the time that this happened to him. So I was working with him to do that. And then it just got to be a diagnosis that was beyond his perception of, I can fix this. And he said to me, this time, mate, I can't, I've got it. You keep telling me, what do you want to do, live or die? And he said, this time, I quite definitely have to say, I'm going for my wings. Can you please coach me to pass away? And in 3 months, he was able to just go back within, talk to his heart, and allow himself to make negotiations with the whole field of who he was, to just allow him, his heart to stop. And he did. And I nursed him all the way through that time out here in the bush, in the Australian bush, by myself. And that was a very powerful experience. And I remember how it felt like. cleaving off masses of life, just all dropped away, like you said, and it defined right to what is real right now, and the rest is just junk. And yeah, it was so helpful, and yet it also took me right out of everyday life. It separated me a great deal from my friends and so on for a while. But for 2 years after he passed away, because he created a dying day that was synchronistic to the point where it would make your hair stand on end. But he actually created that with his own ability to go within and out, focus on the energy processes. After he passed, I spent 2 years diligently working with the energy processes. I had calling in more, but I wanted more complete. During that time, the healing codes arrived, but I had a whole toolbox and do now that I could select so that when in this moment in time I feel this right, I use that tool and apply it that way, and in moments I'm in a different place. And it took me about 2 years to clean out the major amount of negativity, because grief is like any other thought pattern. It is a vibration, and we can collapse a negative, destructive vibration into a positive vibration. And the more we can understand that, because it is vastly different from medicine. Medicine is doing treating, it's working with the symptoms, it's working with the chemical parts of the body, whereas energy is working with the actual feel that you are and the vibration you are experiencing and emitting, and that's effortlessly, you know, turn a few dials and switches, rewire here and rewire there, and we literally can do this. But it's a major, major shift from what we knew before. So the first thing we bump into is our attitude to ourselves and struggle with not feeling good enough and all of that list of nasty little ones. And the energy processes will actually address those as well as. So it is. It works in with the mindfulness very much there, because you do have to love and encourage yourself to keep utilizing your tools to keep getting the change that you want as fast as you want. So grief is mendable, and one grief will bring up a whole lot of grief.
Yeah, you've been working with me a lot on that, Susan, with my past lives and the things I have been remembering and the endless number of subconscious layers that we have of these griefs.
Grief isn't necessarily from this life. You know, people can have grief from past lives, as is the case with you, David.
So yeah, time to get into it now. No, but it's been very profound difficult for me in dealing with those lives, actually.
But I guess what connects us all is the fact that we are all in it together. We all will experience grief, just as we will experience love and joy. And I guess being grateful for what we have and not sweating the small stuff is one of the key ways of living your life in a wise way.
Absolutely.
With skillful means.
Lana. And what you said, Susan, was right on, and I appreciate that. And Christine, I'm so grateful to have you on the show, both of you, today, and
really
sharing your wisdom with us.
So we have to unfortunately finish there, but thank you so much, Christine. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. I don't know if you have anything else you want to say before we go.
Thank you. I probably would just say that, you know, what came up for me when I was listening is just, I want to just say to people that, you know, when you tune in and you're, it's okay to feel your feelings of grief. It's okay to cry. And actually we have this really innate healer inside of us that knows how to heal, as long as you don't repress it and you be in it when it's there, and then you're very present to your life, you'll be fine, and you'll return to a really happy state of joy if you just allow yourself to feel your feelings and cry when you need to cry and laugh when you need to laugh.
Absolutely. I think we're all human beings, and in the end I tell people it's going to be okay no matter what. Even in death, it's going to be okay. We are immortal, eternal beings. So
That's a lovely, important thought to hang on to.
Faith.
That's right. Boy, I feel like we could go on for hours and hours. I love these discussions. Yeah. They are so inspiring.
Would you like to just give your website very quickly, Christine? I mean, you're very well known. Anyone can find you on Google, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, just www.christinecarlson.com. That's with a K. And then you can also go to don'tsweat.com. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay. Thank you so much, Susan and Christine.
Thank you, too.
Bye, Susan. You too. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, much gratitude. Bye.